So let me just show you some of these slides and get your thoughts on it. We did kind of a random survey of general medical oncologists, and I just want to get your thoughts on it. And so now here are the other participants in the same program. We ask a bunch of specific questions related to, you know, lung, et cetera. But what I want to show you in the beginning is the general questions. There were 75 general medical oncologists randomly picked. You can see they were spread all across the country. Yeah, pretty good distribution there. I think we had 7 from New York and 11 from California, but a typical random distribution. I thought this was kind of interesting. We said, how would you rate the severity of COVID in your area? 1, not a problem, and 5, like New York. And pretty much nobody says 1 anymore. In fact, as you'll see, things like PPE and visitors are uniform everywhere, which I'm sure that doesn't surprise you.
It doesn't. And I don't think it's an overreaction. You know, this is one of the most contagious viruses we've seen. We had a patient who initially was negative, and the false negative rate is really concerning. We had a patient that was negative. One of our staff members went in with a mask, other side of the room. When she was positive, he got tested. It was his only exposure, the only time he was in with a patient, and he was positive. Just to show that a brief interaction, even through a mask, is possible. Really, really concerning.
This is interesting, too, that we found, and of course, we can cross-reference this, although there are not that many people. I'm sure it correlates with how bad the problem is, but I did think it was interesting that you see kind of a split between whether people allow any visitors or not, and I see that you allow 1. You know, I've heard different issues, some being using PPE and, you know, a lot of other concerns, but I'm just kind of curious how you all came with the idea of allowing a visitor as opposed to many other places don't allow any, and how much of a difference it makes. I would think that would be a huge difference to the patient.
Yeah, I think that having more people in the clinic does increase the risk. It makes the waiting rooms more crowded. It has more people in the examination room. That's really something we try to minimize. Certainly, we're not going to allow 10 people in one visit. I think the risk is too overwhelming, not just to our staff and to the physicians, but also to the patient, because we can be exposing them. And I think that's not fair, and it puts them at added risk. But visitors are really an important part of cancer care. And while other areas within our hospital are not allowing any visitors, we have been allowing 1 visitor in oncology clinics just because of the unique course of cancer care and the real importance with caregivers. And a lot of data showing that caregiver support really influences outcomes for patients with cancer, particularly for patients who have difficulty with mobility, which unfortunately is common a lot with lung cancer due to fatigue, due to debility from their cancer or from their treatment. They really can't get around on their own. And it really seemed impractical and somewhat inhumane to have someone wheel themselves in within a wheelchair. So anyone with problems with mobility is allowed to have 1 visitor. I think this is going to evolve as our understanding of risk evolves as well.
And of course, I wouldn't have to tell you that the use of telemedicine has skyrocketed. Any comments in terms of the negative sides? I guess one question is, I guess it varies a lot geographically, but not everybody has access to the hardware that you need in order to do this. And I'm just kind of curious in general, in your practice, how have you found telemedicine, both the positives and negatives?
So I think you bring up an extremely important point, that what telemedicine has done is really exposed a lot of the disparities in healthcare. I was surprised by the number of patients who weren't able to access telemedicine visits because they only have a landline or a flip phone, or they simply are not technologically savvy enough to make that happen. A lot of our patients with lung cancer are a bit older. Patients often don't have as much support around the home. Families aren't visiting as frequently. And so the barriers to implementing telemedicine exist, particularly in different rural areas, for different generations, different ages, and socioeconomic barriers. The use of data, the cost for cell phone, Wi-Fi, and data transfer is something that we really can't minimize. So I was surprised by the number of people that had unforeseen barriers to implementing telemedicine. In my own practice, it's probably about 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 patients that simply can't do a telemedicine visit. Are there different strategies? We had one where a patient was using a phone in his primary care doctor's office or using a computer screen there. And can we, in the future, perhaps look at public places? Can we introduce some sort of soundproof booths in libraries or try to extend public? Because this isn't going away. And I think these strategies need to be there for everyone, not just for people who can afford them. And when you look at surveys that show satisfaction with telemedicine, those surveys are only completed by people that can access the survey through a computer, for example. So of course they're going to like telemedicine. It's the people that can't even do the survey where we're really not reaching them. And I think there are advantages. The advantages of telemedicine is really keeping the patients out, which decreases their risk, decreases everyone's risk at the hospital by distancing. But there are some significant disadvantages. Sometimes it's hard to get a sense for how strong someone is if they're just sitting in front of a screen. A physical examination can still play a role in management. And there are, again, technical barriers to interactions. And for me, I will also say, and I hope this doesn't sound selfish, I think there's a lot less satisfaction in a telemedicine visit. And I didn't get into oncology when I was in training through telemedicine. It was really being with that patient, establishing that rapport, looking them in the eyes, sort of physical contact. To me, that's an important part of care and compassion. And it doesn't translate as well through a computer screen, particularly for a patient I'm meeting the first time.
We were talking about a case the other day in a program where a doc actually started a patient on treatment without physically seeing the patient. The patient presented at telemedicine. They had a primary care doc. There was actually a doctor in the family as well, so they knew exactly what they wanted to do. They wanted to, this is actually a patient with bladder cancer. It got put on an IO. And then the doc ended up seeing the patient after he'd gotten a couple treatments. And I said, I'm curious, you know, how was it to meet with the patient now compared to when you interacted by telemedicine? Was there anything different when you actually met him in person? He was 95, incidentally. And he said, you know, the one thing was I got much more of a feel for how scared he was. I didn't realize on the telemedicine, but when I was in the room with him, I could feel it.
A lot of these social cues and nonverbal cues get lost in telemedicine. That's a real important part of healthcare, I think. It's a very good point.